Welcome back, everybody, to the podcast. Today is a very exciting episode because it's episode 60 of the podcast. Now, I never thought we'd get to episode 20, never mind 60. So before we start, I just want to say a huge thank you to you guys for all the support. It truly means the world. Now, every 20 episodes, we do a Q&A episode where you guys can ask me anything, no matter how controversial, and I'll answer it in kind of a raw, uncut format. Now, there is quite a few controversial questions that I'll be going over, including my thoughts on Ozempic, which are quite strong, to be honest, or stuff like how to get over imposter syndrome. I've got a couple of tips that will help you do that if that's something that you struggle with. Also, there's some more fun ones like what I think of the Amiga Railmaster leaks that have been kind of shared online, if I think they're real or fake. So yeah, there's so much interesting stuff to get our teeth into. And without further ado, let's start this episode of the Into the Mind podcast, episode 60, the Q&A special. All right, let's start with question one. So what's a moment in your career that's completely changed your perspective on creativity? I think there's two moments in particular that stand out to me as changing my perspective on what it means to be an artist and what it means to create things that emotionally trigger other people. Let's start with number one, which is the most recent. So Corey Richards was on the podcast. Now, Corey Richards is a world-renowned photographer, and he is also an adventurer, you could call him. So he climbed Mount Everest with no oxygen. Yes, I know, absolutely wild. He got caught in an avalanche, almost died. He was featured on the cover of Nat Geo because he took a picture straight after the avalanche of his face. Crazy. This guy is just super insightful, super knowledgeable, and just fascinating to talk to. And we had quite a long conversation about photography and why certain photos mean a lot to people. And he talked about the fact that the photo needs to speak to you in some way. You can't copy or emulate other people because it's not coming from within. That's coming from external factors. And it really made me reflect on my own work and begin really honing in on the fact that it needs to trigger some kind of emotion from me in order for it to be valid art from myself. And I think that definitely changed my photography style. I think that I definitely think of that a lot more now when I'm doing my photography. The next one, the more profound one that had a huge impact on my career, was about 4 or 5 years ago. It was during COVID. Now, I'm not sure if you guys will remember this, but back in the day, there used to be DVDs. So we'd get like a DVD that was a video or a movie, and you could put that into your DVD player, and then it spins and your DVD plays. My mum had created all these DVDs of us when we were growing up, and it was like 6 DVDs, I think, of the family when we were growing up and us as kids and kind of growing older together. Now, they couldn't access those DVDs for about 8 years just because of technology moving forward and everybody going to Netflix and Amazon Prime and all that kind of stuff. So I took those DVDs and I managed to figure out how to burn them onto my hard drive at home. So essentially get access to the videos that were on the DVDs. I then used those videos and made an edit for my mum for Mother's Day of us when we were children cutting to us when we were older. I feel like I'm going to start getting emotional talking about it, but I basically showed my mum this video that I created on Mother's Day, and there was floods of tears from both of us. And then I showed my dad, and my dad is more of a stern guy, more of an old-fashioned guy, and he was in floods of tears as well. And it had a profound impact on the way that I shoot videography. I try and have it emotionally driven, emotionally led. I try and get some form of reaction from the person that's watching it. I think that's the beauty of videography. It can be used to inspire. It can be used to make people feel sad or happy or laugh or cry. And it's so long ago now, five, 6 years ago, has stuck with me as what I think of when I create videos now. I want to try and pull a reaction out of people. And if I get that reaction, it's a good video. So yeah, I feel like I'm getting emotional even thinking about that, so I'm gonna move on. But that definitely had, those two moments had profound impacts on me as a photographer or videographer, and definitely changed my perspective on creativity. Next up, should Darcy Graham have been picked for the Lions squad? I don't know, it's hard because Doohan got selected, and he, of course, is the same position as Darcy, Darcy's winger. I think that, honestly, my position on that, my stance on that is yes. I don't think there's a better player or a better winger than Darcy. I'm biased, of course, because I'm Scottish, but I don't think there's a better winger than Darcy in the world at the moment. I think that Doohan and Darcy are the two best wingers that you can get. And I for sure think he should have been picked for the Lions squad. But also, I don't know whether he's injured at the moment. I know that Darcy struggles with some issues. I know that he collided heads with Finn Russell in the Six Nations. I don't know if that's had an impact on that. I don't know if there's underlying stuff that we don't know about as the general public that's maybe been going on there. But the short answer to that is yes. I think Darcy's an incredible rugby player and he should have been picked for the Lions. I think Doohan is also an incredible player and deserved to be picked for the Lions. But, you know, it's ultimately not my decision. Was there ever a time that you thought about giving up? Why did you keep going? Yes, there was a time that I thought of giving up. I think there's a point in everyone's journey where they start to outgrow their group of friends, but they're not sufficiently developed enough to have found their new group of friends. And this is called the lonely chapter. And I do think that when I turned 18 or 19, I kind of had an old friend group that I wasn't seeing eye to eye with, and I left them to pursue my career, and I went through a stage where I would say it was quite lonely. I didn't have many friends. I didn't have many people around me. And a lot of my photography and videography would be literally taken by myself. It wasn't like I was going anywhere with groups of people. It was like I was getting up at 2 a.m, driving to Glencoe by myself and going up a hill by myself. It was all, you know, self-motivated. It wasn't any external motivation there from friends or whatever. So I think that is a very real thing that people go through. And it's so easy to turn back and to just go back to your old group of friends because it's comfortable and then not progress your career forwards. But I think that you need to go through that lonely chapter in order to find that new group of people that speak to you and that have similar interests and similar, like similar things. So I think that's something that everybody goes through. And what was the second part of that question? There was a second part of that question. Why did you keep going? I kept going because I loved what I did. And I still have a vision for where I want to go. I'm quite motivated in that sense. And I do feel that was better for me than the group of friends I was hanging around with before. So I think that I had a vision. I think that I still have a vision. There's places that I want to go. There's things that I want to do. And I don't want to be the guy that goes out drinking every weekend. I want to be the guy that builds something really meaningful that I can pass down to my kids. And yeah, and that's what I want to do. And that was kind of always the vision for me. Thoughts in the new Amiga Railmaster leaks and rumors. I don't know. I've seen a picture of this and it kind of looks fake. To me, the watch genuinely looks fake, but I do think that the packaging looks real behind it, like the way that the cellophane's over it and all that kind of stuff. I think that that's a fake watch. I think that that has been created somewhere in China and somebody's saying that it's real. I don't think it is. Unfortunately, as much as I want to believe it, and the rumors have suggested that it could be true, I do think that it's fake. Or this specific model is fake. Maybe they are bringing a Railmaster out, but I think this specific model is fake. It's just like there's only one picture of it and it's been shared on Reddit and everyone's losing their minds and there's no other pictures of it and nobody else has seen it. And also when Amiga release a watch, they normally release the watch before sending it to the stockists or the boutiques to prevent against leaks. So if it has been leaked, it's been leaked from Amiga's HQ. And I just can't see that happening. I really can't see that happening. I do believe that it's just fake. I don't think that that would have been leaked. I don't think that anybody would have leaked it from Amiga. Unfortunately, I don't think that one's true. Right. Next up, I'm going to have a sip of tea here. How often should I go to the gym a week? That's kind of subjective. I think that I can only speak from personal experience here. I try and go to the gym 6 times a week. I try and do 3 to 4 days of weights and 3 days of cardio, maybe 2 days of cardio if I don't have time. So that's what I try and do, but I think as much as you can. I think that health is super important. It makes you feel better. It makes you act more positively. It makes you see the world in a more positive light. It's just the best. It's truly the best medicine is exercise. So I think that going to the gym once a week is a lot better than going to the gym not at all. So I think that going to the gym as much as you can is the best thing to do. I would start by trying to get in a really basic program. I would try and maybe do 3 days a week of the gym and alternate between weights and cardio. And that's maybe where I would start. And then you can develop from there. Now, I've been going to the gym since I was like 16 or 17. And I followed quite a similar program, but I change it up throughout the years. And it definitely has had a impact on me as I get older. Now, I'm 27, I'm not old, but it's definitely had a positive impact on how I can live my life. And I want to maintain that into when I'm older. I don't want to be a dad and have children that I can't play with because my back or my legs hurt or my knees out or, you know, whatever it is. I want to be fun, energetic, and be able to play with my children. And in order to do that, you need to look after yourself. You know, your body is your most valuable asset. Your health is your most valuable asset. So yeah, I think going to the gym as much as you can is the answer that I would give. But if you want more specifically when and what to do, try and go 3 times a week, alternate between weightlifting and cardio, and everything can be found online. Literally everything can be found online. We've even got podcasts with Ironmen like Marcus Kennedy, and he talks through programs that he gives people, and you can just take that and implement it. It's honestly, it's and once you get into the gym, it's kind of addictive because you can't then live without it. Like if I don't go to the gym, I feel really quite depressed. I feel really quite down. And whenever I go to the gym, I feel a sense of accomplishment. I also feel the just more positive, and it's quite profound. It truly is. So yeah, I think as much as you can, but if not as much as you can, 3 times a week. What do you think of the Ozempic craze? The Ozempic craze will have negative knock-on effects. There are 100% going to be side effects that come out of this crazy period of Ozempic, a little bit like they did the vaccine. Now, the pharmaceutical companies, in my opinion, are going to cash in while they can. They're marketing, they're branding this drug as the miracle that will help you lose weight without any side effects. Let me just read you some of the side effects from Ozempic really, really quickly. Nausea, abdominal pain, bloating, blurred vision, constipation, diarrhea, dizziness, allergic reactions, fatigue, gallstones, heartburn, acute kidney injury, burping, loss of appetite, pancreatitis, headaches, thyroid cancer, gastritis, tachycardia, reduced urination, stomach pain or swelling, injection site reaction, bowel obstruction. These are listed online as the side effects of Ozempic. I do not think, just as it takes a long time to gain weight, it will take a long time to lose weight. And there's no easy way to do it. I think that looking a little bit deeper than that, when you see people that have taken Ozempic, their muscles deteriorate as well as their fat. Now, as you get older, your muscles are so important because they support your tendons and your bones. So by deteriorating your muscles, you're putting yourself more at risk as you get older to mess up something, break your bones, you know, break a leg or an arm or a hip. And then as a knock-on result of that, when you do break that hip when you're older, you're out of action, which makes your muscles deteriorate even more. It is a terrible craze that I think people should not be doing, in my personal opinion. And I think just like what happened with the COVID vaccine, in a couple of years' time, when there's been sufficient testing, you're going to see lots more side effects coming out of this. I would not hesitate to say that there will be cancers caused by this. There will be deterioration of your organs because of this. There will be super, super strong, bad, terrible side effects of Ozempic. And I would steer clear of it. If you want my answer, I would get into an exercise routine. I would cut the stuff out your diet that's making you gain weight. And I would try and do it naturally. I think that is the only healthy way to do it, is naturally. That's my opinion. I do not think Ozempic is good. I think Ozempic is really quite terrible. And it's quite funny. You look at Hollywood, and there is lots of body positivity in Hollywood. And as soon as Ozempic came out, as soon as Ozempic became a thing, everybody in Hollywood that had that body positivity mentality was on Ozempic and was losing weight fast. It like shattered the illusion of body positivity in Hollywood. It was crazy. It was total nonsense what these people were saying. Because as soon as they had the option, they did it like that. So I don't think you can, you know, cure being overweight with some miracle drug. It takes a long time to get sick, to get overweight. It will take a long time to get better. And that is my quite strong beliefs on Ozempic. I always say beware of Greeks beholding gifts, because normally it's bullshit. And I guarantee you that there'll be stuff that comes out about this in a couple of years' time. Have you felt comfortable wearing a dollar, dollar, dollar sign watch in certain situations like work? That's a good question. I feel comfortable wearing a nice watch if I know exactly where I'm going to be and I trust the place that I'm going to be. If I'm going to be at a nice restaurant in Scotland somewhere, which is where I live, then that's okay. I would feel okay about that because I know I'm going to be in the restaurant, out in a car, and then gone. If I'm totally honest, when I'm in London, I don't wear a nice watch. I just can't. I've seen too many videos of people getting mugged, machetes to their neck, and theft of the watch. And it's a shame because I would like to enjoy my watches in all places, but there are certain places where you just do not want to provoke that kind of attention. And unfortunately, in London, it's getting worse and worse. So London is somewhere that I normally don't wear an expensive watch. Actually, I don't wear a watch at all. It may be my Garmin, but apart from that, I don't wear a watch at all in London. So yeah, I feel comfortable going to certain events with watches if I know exactly where I'm going to be and I'm driving or I'm getting a taxi home, whatever it is, but it depends where I'm going and if I'm going out afterwards. There's actually, it's really terrifying. In London at the moment, we had a family friend and he walked into a restaurant, a very upper class, expensive restaurant in London. And he had a Rolex on. I think it was a Rolex Submariner, a bimetal or a gold Rolex Submariner, something like that. And the first thing you do when you get into the restaurant is you take off your jacket. So he took off his jacket, he's sitting there and he gets his meal, beautiful meal. And then he gets up and he leaves. As soon as he steps outside the shop, somebody grabs him, pulls him down, machete to the neck. They had a spotter in the restaurant that was getting a meal, texting the gangs outside saying the guy in the green jacket with blue jeans, he has a Rolex blah, blah, blah on. The guy in the black leather jacket with the cargo trousers has this watch on, you know, maybe a Vacheron or a Patek. And they had spotters in the restaurant. And that's why I don't even trust going out in London anymore, because of these gangs that are kicking her out, because of the theft. It's a shame. It truly, truly is, because the UK did not used to be like this. But unfortunately, especially in London, it is. And it makes me nervous. Okay, so the next question is, no offense, but your podcast is still quite small. How do you get the guests you do? None taken. No offense taken. I think, as a society, we're terrified to ask for things. We're terrified to ask for the promotion. We're terrified to ask a girl on a date. We're terrified of everything. We are an anxious generation of TikTok and Instagram, you know, reels. And I think where I was slightly different is, like, I had nothing to lose. I was, you know, the podcast was something that I was developing on the side, and I truly had nothing to lose. And I was unapologetically myself, and I would just message people being like, by the way, I'm a huge fan. Is it okay if you come in the podcast? And maybe 90% of the people say no, but you get 10% of the people that go, yeah, sure, man, like, that's fine. So I do think that it's just having the confidence to ask for things. And if you don't ask, you don't get. So I think where I maybe was slightly different is I just messaged a lot of people and said, listen, I've got this podcast. I'm a really big fan. I'd love to have you on. A perfect example of this is Blair Kinghorn. So the second episode of the podcast, I messaged Blair and I said, listen, mate, I know I've not met you, but I'm a huge fan. Love what you're doing in rugby, in the Scotland team. And I'd love to speak to you. Blair drove down from Edinburgh to Glasgow just to do the podcast, which is a total testament to his character as well, because he's a lovely guy. But that was all just because I asked. So I think it honestly is just having the confidence to ask people. And if they say no, then that's fine. That's the worst that will happen is they go, listen, unfortunately, no, it's not for me. And you go, that's fine. That's okay. But yeah, it's just having the confidence to ask people. And sometimes it pays off. Talk me through. I know exactly who's asked this question. It's Chris, a grainy boy on Instagram. He's been on the podcast before. Incredible film photographer. Talk to me about your stance on 100 men versus one silverback gorilla. I think that silverback gorilla is fucking everyone up. I think that silverback gorilla will destroy every single man. Now, it obviously depends if technology comes into this, because if the guys can have guns, obviously they'll beat the silverback gorilla. But if you drop 100 naked men with nothing into the forest and one silverback gorilla, the silverback gorilla will rip them limb from limb and pick them off one by one. The people, the guys, do not have a chance. I'm telling you that now. My view is the silverback gorilla destroys the 100 men. Okay. Which camera do I use? I use the Canon R5. It fits my needs perfectly. Shoots 124 frames, 8K, I think, which is insane, more than you'll ever need. It shoots beautiful raw images. The color capture on Canon's better than any other camera that I've used. Canon R5 has truly been my best camera ever, I would say. And that's not a small statement. I love that camera. I've been using it for years. Favorite Watches and Wonders release? There was lots of beautiful watches when it came to intricacies and movements. Vacheron specifically releasing the most complicated watch in the world. Jesus, that was beautiful. But in terms of just like my personal preference, I actually made a video about this the other day. My personal preference, I would say, has to be the Tudor Black Bay Pro Opaline Dial or White Dial, the Polar Dial, if you want to call it that. I think that watch speaks to me in tons of ways. And I think that it has an undeniable sense of adventure, an undeniable sense of wanting to be worn. And honestly, that was my favorite. It's kind of boring, I know, because it's just a color change, really. But it's honestly, that's my favorite. Tudor Black Bay Pro. Or not Tudor Black Bay Pro. My favorite watch from Watches and Wonders. Is there any podcasts you haven't aired and why? Yes, there's been multiple podcasts we haven't aired. And normally, typically speaking, it comes down to the quality of the audio. I know that kind of sounds boring, but when you're listening to this podcast in a car or in the subway or on your headphones, wherever you might be, the audio has a big impact on your listening capabilities, on you wanting to tune in and wanting to watch and listen more. And sometimes we have audio issues with guests where they have headphones and their mic's not properly set up, and it has a big impact on the results, the quality of the podcast. And I am a little bit OCD as a photographer and videographer. I think a lot of us are. And I enjoy good quality podcasts. So normally it comes down to the audio quality, and there's a certain threshold that I just can't go below. And that's why some of them don't get aired. It's not to say the guests weren't fantastic. It's just that it's the audio quality. And I don't want you guys to be listening to something and have massive, you know, plosives going through the mics or, you know, pops and just not nice. Do you have more or less friends now than when you started in your career? Less, 100% less. And I think that goes back to that lonely chapter that I talked about before. And I'm just going to repeat that because I think it's really important. There's a certain period in everyone's life that they're too developed for their old set of friends, but they're not sufficiently developed for their new set of friends. And everyone with ambition goes through that period in their life. And that definitely happened to me. So I had lots of friends when I was like 18. I now have 4 or 5 friends that I see on the regular, and that's pretty much it. And I'm okay with that because those people are, or those friends are people that I could trust with anything. If I was in trouble, I'd call them. I know they'd be there. And I remember my parents telling me when I was really young, you know, you're really lucky if you have 2 or 3 really good friends when you get older. And I always remember thinking that utter horse crap. Like, I don't believe that because I've got so many friends in school. But as you get older, you realize that actually she was right. If you have 2 or 3 friends that would fucking die for you, that would do anything for you, that would be there whenever you needed them, that would look after your kid, and you trust them to do that if you needed it, you're really, really lucky. So yeah, it's always an awkward phase drifting away from your old group of friends, but it's needed when you're moving up in your career sometimes and you're just different. You just don't speak the same language anymore. What's the worst condition you've ever put yourself in for a photo? There's been lots of uncomfortable situations that I've put myself in for photos. Heights minus 25 in terms of, you know, weather, all that kind of stuff. I think, yeah, well, there's one instance actually that kind of is above the rest in terms of just risk and literally almost dying. So we were in Norway when I was about 22, and it wasn't quite winter, so the days were still relatively long, but you had nights. And when you have nights in the Nordic countries, you have northern lights, especially when it's clear. Now, we had a string of, I think, like 3 days where it was clear. So what we would do is we'd get up for sunrise, we'd then kind of have a nap during the day, then we'd go out for sunset, and then wait until 3, 4 in the morning to try and get the northern lights. We repeated this cycle for like 2 or 3 days. I then arrived back in Scotland after having virtually no sleep over 3 days. I kid you not, I had hours worth of sleep over 2 or 3 days. And the weather for the next day was meant to be really good in Scotland, and I needed to film a project for a watch brand. So what I did is I thought, right, fuck it. I'm just going to get up at like 2 in the morning. I'm going to drive to Glencoe, climb a mineral for sunrise, get an epic video, come down, and then go home and sleep. So I get up at 2 in the morning, drive to Glencoe. I scoot up this mountain, which took a while. I then come down and it's like 8 a.m. So it's super, super early. And because I've been driving in Norway, they drive in the left-hand side of the road. I, being so tired and exhausted from doing this Munro, I drift straight into the left-hand side of the road, go around a blind corner, or right-hand side of the road, go around a blind corner, and I'm seconds away from a head-on collision with a massive truck. I pulled over to the right-hand side, or the right side of the road that I should have been on, which is the left side in Scotland, and I went onto the dirt track on the left, because I went too far, and then I managed to scoot back on, and the car kind of managed to correct itself. And I was about 3 seconds away from death, like literal death. And from that moment on, I was like very religious about the fact that I need to get sleep. I think when you're young, you don't need it as much, but when you get older, like, these things start to happen, and it's weird when it starts, but you need sleep. I need sleep. And it's unsafe for me not to sleep. So that's the most dangerous situation I've been in terms of risk associated with a project. And that was stupidity from, you know, my front, just not sleeping. And I shouldn't have done it. It was just very, very dumb. I think in terms of like conditions, you have Finland, which is minus 25, We would go a hike out into the hills in Finland and sit there for hours just waiting for the Northern Lights to come out, if they were to come out. And that was pretty brutal. I think, there's tons of instances of just like uncomfortable weather. Sulawesi in Indonesia, it's unbelievably warm. And I sun creamed everywhere. And I was doing a shoot underwater with these jellyfish. And the only thing that I didn't think of is like where my hat had been had rubbed all the sun cream away. I came out and I looked like I had a helmet on my head. So burnt, like my scalp was peeling. It was awful, like third degree burns. So yeah, there's lots of positions that you can find yourself that's quite uncomfortable for photography, but sometimes uncomfortability leads to the best photography. And it's shots that not many other people can get or have. And that's why it's good to put yourself in these positions. Okay. What should I get as my first camera? I'm a Canon user. I always have been. I was sponsored to Canon for like 2 years. I'm not sponsored anymore, so I can say what I want. I think in terms of color capture, I do believe that Canon has that nailed. I believe that Canon are above anyone else when it comes to color capture. When it comes to videography and affordability, I think Sony have that nailed. So it's really your choice. A lot of my friends use Sony. I have always used Canon, probably always will use Canon. So it depends on whether you want the affordability aspect or you want better color capture. And I think that in terms of videography, Sony's probably ahead of Canon now. I don't know, I'm biased because I use Canon, but honestly, I think I'd go for Sony. I think they're the better camera now, really. What's one tip for someone trying to grow on YouTube right now? If you were trying to grow on YouTube right now, I would remember consistency above all else. And I know that's not what you want to hear, and I know that's boring, but if you are consistent in posting, you are also consistent in learning. So if you're consistent, you post twice a week, you post 2 videos a week, and you consistently look at those videos, look at what was wrong, why they didn't perform, the retention rates, and develop on that, you will then get to a stage in a year or two's time that is the polished, finished article. I often say to people that luck is hundreds of hours of work seen for the first time. People see our YouTube videos on the Chisholm Hunter channel or the podcast or whatever it might be, or my Instagram channel. I mean, like, oh, he got lucky. He went really viral. But you guys didn't see the hundreds of hours of work that was put in before we went viral or you went viral or whoever it is what went viral. So if you're seeing someone for the first time and you think, my God, that's incredible. I wish I could do that. I wish I could be him or her. It's probably because it's just the first time you're seeing them and they've been doing this for a very long time and they've honed in on it and they've made themselves good at it. Anything takes time. It takes graft, and that's natural. So consistency above all else is how you would grow and develop on YouTube. I'm too scared to quit my job, but also kind of miserable. What do I do? I think that comfortability when it comes to jobs is really dangerous. And the reason being is that if you are being kept just above water, if you're managing to pay your rent, you're managing to go out every weekend with the guys and you're affording that, and you're maybe managing to tuck away £200, £300 a month, and saving at the same time. You were just comfortable enough to not want to leave and do your own thing. I think that if that was flipped and you were very uncomfortable and it forced you to leave, it forced you to take action, sometimes that is actually better because it kind of forces you into that mode of, no, I can't do this anymore, I'm doing the next thing. So if you're not enjoying your job, then you need to take action, is what I would say. Now, sometimes, you know, being self-employed is not for everyone. It's super difficult. It's super hard. You know, I had businesses, Lifelens Clothing was a business that I used to own, and it went, you know, I had to liquidate it because it went bankrupt pretty much. You know, this shit is not easy at all. Not at all. And it's not for everyone. Some people prefer to have the management and be employed. And that's great. That's how people grow in their careers and have really successful careers. But if you're really not enjoying yourself, you need to take action. You need to leave. You need to, I mean, like, can you imagine in 20 years time you look back and you think, I've stayed in a job that I don't like because I was kind of comfortable for 20 years. And now I don't have any other option because I'm, you know, maybe 40 or 50. So I would say take action. You need to take action. You need to have an action plan. You need to save up for, you know, a good chunk of time and have a buffer. You need to have enough money to get you through the next 6 months and you need to give it your best shot. You need to say, listen, I've got enough money to get me through the next 6 months. I'm going to set up my business in month one. I'm going to start selling in month two. In month three, I'm going to see the projections and then, you know, keep going like that. And that's honestly what I would say. I say you need to take action and you need to have a plan to get where you want to be. There's a really incredible book that I am reading at the moment, and it's called The Law of Attraction. And for anybody that's struggling within themselves to do what they want to do and to get where they want to get to, I would highly suggest reading The Law of Attraction. It's brilliant. I saw you at Watches and Wonders and you look knackered. Well, that's probably because I was knackered. They released all the watches, as you guys might have seen, at 1 minute past midnight or midnight. As a result of that, I was up at 3 a.m. filming a Rolex video, so I was probably knackered. Have you ever had a moment on the road where things completely went wrong? Yes, there's been multiple moments. There's always issues when it comes to being on site or like on the road, not in a studio. Because in a studio, you have backups, right? You have backups of batteries, backups of mics, backups of cameras, lights, everything. But when you're on the road, you don't have those backups as much. So it gets difficult. We had an instance where we were filming with Grant Wilson, who's the UK director of IWC, who's incredible, amazing guy. And we didn't anticipate that it would be 25 degrees that day. And the flat that we were filming in Edinburgh would get very, very hot. So we were filming a podcast and the cameras overheated. So as a result, we had to put the cameras in the fridge. I kid you not. And it worked. I know there'll be a lot of people that get angry at me here, but it genuinely, it worked. There's been other times where we have filmed podcasts and the audio quality sucks. It's not good enough. There's been times where the car has broken down in Finland randomly. It just broke down in the middle of the main road and we couldn't tow it because the handbrake was locked on. So we had to get a taxi back 2 hours and get a new car. There's just tons of stuff that happens when you're on the road that you can't foresee. I've broken cameras, broken lenses, crashed drones multiple times. I was in the Isle of Harris last week and I crashed my drone on the beach. Now, luckily it's fine, but it happens. I was in Siloasi 2 months ago, a month and a half, 2 months ago, and I was flying my drone at a waterfall and there's a vine that was hanging down that the sensors didn't pick up and it went into the vine, crashed the drone. I jumped into the river after the drone and I was in there for half an hour, 45 minutes, but because there was torrential rain, it was kicking up all the mud, so I couldn't see. So I was just searching this muddy, disgusting kind of waterfall for my drone for like 45 minutes and couldn't find it. There's tons of stuff that happens on the road, but at the end of the day, if you crash your drone, it's just a drone. You probably have DJI Care, you can get a new one. If you mess with your camera, you've got insurance, or you know, you should have insurance, you can fix it. It's not the end of the world. And sometimes people act and can get very upset by these things, but just remember it's not the end of the world. There will always be more opportunities to take photos and to get drone shots and videos and all that kind of stuff. Oh yeah, another one is, actually I'm not allowed to, we got mugged in Colombia and we had to flee the country to Peru. I don't want to go into specifics here, but that's a genuine story that actually happened. Maybe one day in the podcast I'll tell it, but at the moment I can't. But we legitimately got mugged in Colombia and had to flee to a different country. No joke. What's one piece of advice you'd give your younger self starting out as a videographer / photographer? I would say be a creator, not a consumer. It's so easy to consume on TikTok, on Instagram Reels, on YouTube, And when you consume so much, you end up replicating the people that you have consumed. And a lot of people start like that. They watch Peter McKinnon, Sam Calder, they watch all the famous YouTubers and they replicate. Now, if you do this for long enough, eventually you find your own tone, your own voice, and you have your own personality. And that ultimately comes across, and that's what people subscribe to. But what makes you unique is that you're you. And if you copy someone else, you're no longer unique. So you need to be a creator, not a consumer. Create what has meaning to you. Create what makes you feel something deep down. And that is how you will make meaningful art for people to see and to value. Right, the next question. What has been your proudest moment? I kind of struggle to be proud of anything because I think I'm very self-critical. I'm a very self-critical person. I always have been. That's like my flaw, I suppose. I think the landing job, like big clients, definitely gives me validation. I wouldn't say I'm proud because I think there's always stuff I can improve upon, but it definitely gave me validation that I was doing something right. I'd honestly struggle to answer that because I am so self-critical. I think that, yeah, I honestly don't know. I don't think I'm proud of, there's things that I'm, I don't know. I don't think I'm proud of that much. I think that I've got so much more room for development, so much more room for growth. And yeah, that's honestly my honest answer. Ah, so I know this person. So A Ginger's Tale on Instagram says, do you have a lens that is your favorite or your favoring lens at the moment? What lens am I favoring? I am favoring at the moment the 15-35 2.8, the wide angle. And that's purely because of the landscape stuff. With that said, I also love the 70-200 2.8 because of the beautiful bokeh you can get. And the detail and the sharpness of that lens is just unbelievable. But yeah, I'm kind of gravitating towards those two. With that said, in the studio, this camera here and this camera in front of me, they are both shooting on a 24-70. So that's one of the most versatile lenses you can get. So yeah, but for me, 15-35, I've fallen back in love with it. And definitely the 70-200. Has anyone farted on the podcast? Not that I'm aware of. I've had some friends on the podcast, so probably. One lesson. What's one lesson you've learned from interviewing someone like Corey Richards or Doohan van der Merwe that stuck with you? I think with Doohan van der Merwe, it's about not giving up and not quitting. Even when all the cards were stacked against Dewey, he still worked hard and got to where he needed to be. You know, he had the issues with his hip. Normally, when people get those kind of issues in rugby, it's their career over, but he didn't, you know, he wanted to keep going. He did keep going. And as a result, he's one of the best players in the world right now. With Corey, it's knowing when to move on. I think that he taught me, Corey hits his ceiling in a certain area and then moves on to the next thing. And I think that's quite important. I think it's always important to challenge yourself to keep moving forward and not stagnating. And that's partially why this podcast exists. And that's partially why I'm into so many different things, because I don't want to stagnate. I want to keep developing myself. So it's knowing when to move on or knowing when to diversify is what I learned from Corey, for sure. I think it's really important in life not to stagnate and to keep learning, to keep moving up, whether that's in your career or, you know, if you're self-employed in your business, you know, whatever it is, I think that's super, super important. That's where the Gents Jewelry Line, the Summit Collection, came into it as well. I wanted to design a jewelry line and I designed the Summit Collection for Chisholm Hunter. And as a result, you know, it challenged me in a lot of ways and I enjoy that challenge. How do you stay grounded while working with big brands like Canon and DJI? How do I stay grounded? I think that there's always somebody that is better than you. I think that there's always room for development. I think there's always room for growth. And you can't let that impact, like you can't, if somebody says you're great at what you do online, you shouldn't listen to it. And at the same time, if somebody disagrees with you online, you shouldn't really listen to it. You should follow your own calling, not listen to external people. You shouldn't seek external validation. You should internally validate yourself. So I think that in terms of grounding, it's knowing that you could always do better. There's always something that you could have done to make that better. Maybe it's tweaking the lighting just a little bit. Maybe it's upgrading the audio quality. Maybe it's editing it a little bit better. But there's always something that you could do to make that better. And it's identifying what that is and keep moving forward. And yeah, grounded. I mean, I've never been a person that has like an ego, I don't think, very much. And that's partially because maybe I have issues around kind of quality and perfectionism. I never think something is good enough, and I'm quite self-critical in that respect. So yeah, I don't think I really have that side of me isn't really prominent, but yeah, there's always someone that's better than you. I think that's what I would say. Is there a place that changed your outlook on life or your work? Is there a place that changed your outlook on life or your work? I'd say traveling anywhere changes your outlook on life. Seeing how other people live and how happy they are makes you understand what you have and be grateful for what you have. So yeah, I love enjoying different cultures, seeing different places. And I think Indonesia in particular really changed my view on, you know, what I find an issue in my flat is a very, you know, it's a non-issue that I'm catastrophizing in my own head. A lot of these people sleep, like their house is one room and they're very happy and content with that. And they have big families and they enjoy their time with their families. And, you know, some issues that I think of sometimes when the heating breaks or there's no hot water or my car doesn't start, that is not an issue. I'm very lucky to even have a car. I'm very lucky to even have heating. I'm very lucky to have hot water. And that's kind of, yeah, that's changed my perspective for sure, especially in Indonesia. And I think that's partially because they're Buddhist, but I suppose that's a different subject. How you landed, or how did you, I think this means, how did you land your first major brand deal? Totally by accident. I got into photography and videography because I knew that people couldn't say that I was wrong. I think if I'm looking introspectively and being totally honest, I had issues around commitment and self-sabotage and criticism of myself. And I knew that I wasn't very successful in school. I didn't get into university. I went to college and quit after 2 months or 3 months. So I was not very educated. And I knew that going into photography and videography, nobody could tell me I was wrong. So nobody could tell me I was wrong, and I kept doing it, repeating it, and then I started to enjoy it. I started to get a little bit better at it, and I think the first big brand, like in terms of like recognizable big brand, was Canon. That was probably the biggest, and that came totally by accident. Actually, I got a message from Canon to my email. I thought it was spam, deleted it. They then emailed me again, and one of the guys I worked with at that point said, "Mate, I think this is legit. I think you should reply to this." And then I was like, "Oh, it is from Canon. You're right. Maybe I should reply." And then I replied, and they said, "No, legitimately, we've seen your Instagram. We've seen your work on Chisholm Hunter channel. We've seen your videography. We want to interview you." And that's what happened. So the answer is totally by accident. I think when you're not looking for things, they tend to come to you. And I think that's a perfect example of that. Okay, so this guy's a watch blogger, I actually know. Horology Cafe says, "What's your favorite whiskey?" I went, interestingly enough, I went to the Isle of Harris last week. When this podcast arrives, it might be a couple of weeks ago, but I got something called the Herch whiskey from the distillery in Harris. It's world famous for its gin, especially because the bottles of the gin are beautiful, but it's world famous for its gin. So I got the Herch whiskey. Honestly, it has been one of my favorite whiskeys I've ever drank, and I did not expect it. Single malt, I think it's 10 or 12 years old. Beautiful whiskey. I've never been much of a whiskey drinker, but I really enjoy that one. So the Herch whiskey from the Isle of Harris, beautiful. Do you prefer working in chaos or controlled locations? Chaos, I find them more exhilarating. I think that it appeases my ADHD. I think that I can thrive in stressful situations. And I think that chaos speaks to me as a person because I am chaotic. How can we find our soulmates? How can we find our soulmates? Wow. I think, listen, when you get into a relationship, it's fun, it's exciting, and you have what we would call the honeymoon phase. After 6 months to a year, that kind of fades off, and the real person, that facade, whatever facade you guys were showing, drops, and the insecurities come out, and the issues that everyone has comes out. I think that if that person is legitimately your best friend through everything, that's when you found your soulmate. Because the sex stuff fades. That fades away with time. It should definitely be worked on, but it fades away with time. And I think that you need to have a best friend in your partner, that you need to speak to each other on an emotional level. You need to support each other. It can't just be, I think that girl's hot, but she's a bit of a cow, so I'm just going to, I'm going to try and get with her just because she's hot. It comes down to the personality. It comes down to the genuine friendship that you guys have. And if you speak each other's language and you make each other laugh and you see light in bad situations and you're there for each other when they need you. So how to find your soulmate? Find your best friend. And if you think your best friend's hot, then maybe that's your soulmate. How do you handle imposter syndrome, especially on the pod? There's something that I've come familiar with quite within the last year, and it's exposure therapy. If you're nervous about something, if you don't enjoy something, expose yourself to it as much as you possibly can, and eventually you will be comfortable with it. So for the podcast, for the first episode of the podcast, I was super nervous, super anxious, and I was for 20 episodes, 30 episodes. And then eventually those nerves begin to dissipate because you've done this like 100 times. You've sat down with guests so many times that you know kind of like roughly how to angle it. I used to write out all my questions before I had a guest on, and then they'd come in and I'd just read off the book. I wouldn't actually listen to what they were saying because I was so preoccupied with the questions. And then I was like, actually, fuck it, I'm going to get rid of the book. And I got rid of the book and the podcast became instantly better because I was listening to the guest. I wasn't nervous about speaking to them. I was asking them questions based on what they were saying instead of just this book that I had written out beforehand. So yeah, I think when it comes to imposter syndrome, it's exposure therapy. If you go into the boardroom, the first time you go into that boardroom, you might be nervous. The 100th time, you're probably not going to be as nervous because you've done it before, you know the process. So exposure therapy is what I would suggest to get over anxiety, to get over imposter syndrome. What piece of gear do you absolutely swear by and why? I mean, I say my camera because I need my camera. In terms of like underrated things that people don't think of that are useful, I think ND filters, polarizers are super, super important. Good audio is unbelievably important when it comes to videography and photography. Well, not photography, videography. And it is so underused and underutilized and underrated. I think that good audio and good sound quality means a lot when it comes to videos. Canon versus DJI. If you could keep one in your kit bag, which is it? My Canon, for sure. I think people overuse drones now. I'm guilty of this as much as anyone else. I think that people rely on their drones too much. You can still tell a beautiful story with a camera. You don't need the drone shots. Whereas, you can live without the drone. You can't live without the camera. So I think that, yeah, it would be the camera. I'd keep my Canon. What's the most underrated piece of equipment for creators that no one talks about? I'd say sound capture. I use DJI mics that are really, really great. I think that's brilliant for capturing sound, or a Rode mic. Just whenever you're vlogging or taking videos, have a Rode mic on to capture the surround sound. I think that's really underutilized. And I'd say a polarizer makes all the difference, especially when it comes to drone stuff. Having a polarizer that strips the reflection out the water, allowing you to see it more clearly, getting rid of that, kind of disgusting reflection. I don't really like shooting that. So that's underutilized, shall we say. If you could work on any dream project, what would it be? I really would love to collaborate with a watch brand like Vacheron Constantin on a limited edition piece. similar to the Everest edition. I think that would be absolutely awesome. Watch collecting speaks to me, you know, as a hobby and a passion. So I think that I'd love to do that. Incorporating my photography in with a watch to create a limited edition would be mega. It would be awesome. And on that note, guys, I think I've been chatting to you for like almost an hour. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, the 60th episode special of the Into Mind podcast. And I'll hopefully catch you guys on the next episode. See you soon.